We're coming to you live from the future.
Whoa. We're in the future. But somehow also the past?
Who knows? I'm Mackenzie.
I'm Liz.
And you're about to listen to our podcast. And we just wanted to tell you a little bit of a little something. Going into season two, we changed our name, as you probably see on your podcast app, to Wisteria Gaze. But we just wanted to let you know, don't be shocked if you hear the old name, because we used to have an old name. But now we are Wisteria Gaze.
And you can find us on social media at Twitter at Wisteria Gaze, on Instagram at Wisteria Gaze _ or WisteriaGaze.com.
So hit us up. That's
Hell
our new name.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Happy Valentine's Day, Liz.
Oh my god, Mackenzie. I'm so glad to be spending this Valentine's Day with you. This is a pre-recorded episode, as they all are, I guess.
Yes.
But we did this all the way back on actual Valentine's Day.
Yeah. I have a question.
Yes.
Will you be my Valentine?
Mackenzie, do you remember when I said yes just a minute ago?
Yeah.
I have to be honest. It wasn't me saying yes to wanting to hear your question. It was me saying yes to whatever your question was. Of course I will be your Valentine. I have a question for you.
Yes?
Will you accept these roses?
Oh, they're so beautiful.
There's a card.
Oh, let me read it. Should I read it out loud?
Yes.
Oh, it's just a drawing of nipples that says, "You up in my heart?"
And?
I am.
I'm yes! Always,
my nipples
yes!
are always up for you, Liz.
Oh my god, oh my god. Congratulations, the podcast is over. We all knew it was always leading up to this.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode... Hello, when we originally recorded this, I said episode 13 and not 14 because I'm a dumb. So, this is episode... 14, not 13. Goodbye. It's a Valentine's episode.
For some reason, I thought you were going to say episode 3.
Can you imagine?
I cannot believe it's been 13 episodes.
We are now in the latter half of the season. We are creeping baby. Up to the season finale.
I miss being in the same room as you.
I do. I know. This time we're not in the same room.
No.
We're going back. But we're gonna get in the same room again soon.
One day.
I really liked this episode.
This was a good episode. I texted you and I started it and I was like, ooh, we got a tasty baby in the house.
The taste is here. And like looking at what this season has left to offer, the end of the season is going to be so tasty.
Yes, I'm so pumped.
I'm really into it. I'm very excited. Do you want to jump into this tasty sody?
I just want you to know it's Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wearing a heart-shaped costume.
Ooh, yeah, I like it.
And I am ready to just float in the pool.
Ooh, float. This episode's called Love is in the Air. And it was premiered on February 13th, 2005.
Oh, my God.
Just mere days before my 10th birthday. So.
Just mere months before mine.
Yeah. I'm a February 15th baby.
Oh.
It was written by Tom Spezialy and directed by Jeff Melman. And they're the same people who wrote and directed episode 4, a.k.a. the, like, strip club episode,
okay.
Bathtub cable guy episode. They're on this show a lot. With hashtag Sondheim Watch, the name of this episode, Love is in the Air, comes from a cut song from the musical A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum.
Ooh.
And apparently, when this premiered, it had an alternative title. And it was What I Did for Love, which is a song from
what
a chorus line.
What I did for love.
I actually kind of prefer that title. It's not Sondheim,
yeah.
But I think it's a better title.
Yeah.
But that's it. And also, just to give us a little bit of buffer going in, this is actually the first of two episodes that Katherine Joosten, a.k.a. Mrs. McCluskey, won an Emmy Award for Outstanding Guest Actress in a Comedy Series. She
Which
won for this and one later in the series.
Interesting.
As well.
Is she in the whole series?
Yes. Spoiler alert, yes.
Oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. She's gonna die in season 8.
Why are you saying that? You immediately jumped to death.
It's my prediction.
Whoa, McCluskey prediction. Yeah, I will not give any spoilers about the character because we're a spoiler-free podcast, but I do really like Mrs. McCluskey over the course of the series. I think she's really, really...
She's
like,
fun.
Yeah, she's going to be fun as we get to know her more as well. I think she's great.
Me, she's going to die. She's fun! She's sad.
Whoa, you're a person of many layers.
That's because she is.
She is too. I like her a lot. I think this is pretty fun. And we get a couple more fun things with her this season as well. So it's going to be great.
Let's go. Let's get out of here.
Let's just get out of here. Also, I wrote, at first, the previously on was very tasty for me.
It brings back the Angela stuff, which I forgot about.
You did?
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember all these forgotten storylines? Here they are. That's the previously on of this episode.
That's so funny.
Literally.
It really is.
Yeah, the latter half of the season,
you can tell it was directed by and written by like the people who did episode 4 because you're getting stuff from episode 4. I can't wait for Ashley to come back.
Literally, remember how when it said in the monologue, like, Gabby hadn't seen the last of her.
She's like, gonna come back in season 8, and she's gonna kill
Mrs. McCluskey.
Yeah.
She's gonna step. Ashley's gonna come back. She will not have aged at all, and she's gonna be the reason why McCluskey dies.
And then we find out that Gabby is her mother.
Holy shit. I can't wait for season 8. Wow. but yeah, we open on a monologue about children and motherhood, and then there's kind of a montage of all the bad arts and crafts Lynette has gotten over the years.
Because there's a line that Mary Alice says that's, children are a gift from God, but the gifts that they give are less than heaven, which is rude, first of all.
Are kids supposed to do?
I don't know.
They have no money. They have no skills.
What they make in school and what they steal.
Yeah. What do you expect your children to make when they're 6 years old, Lynette? Like, Lynette's like, if this isn't a Picasso, I don't want it.
But basically, like, there's also a line where it's like, Lynette just wants something that she's not, like, embarrassed to display. And it's like, I literally was like, come on, dude.
No one's gonna judge you if you display things your kids made.
Yeah.
And also, not to insult the Costa Rican artist who made that pot, but that pot looks like something a child would have made. And she was like, look at this fabulous pot.
You're getting into spoiler territory, Mackenzie.
I haven't
gotten there yet.
You're right.
What we see is we open up to Lynette. We open up on that montage of her getting terrible, terrible baby gifts. And
she should just punch her children in the face if they try to give her anything.
Yeah, just get rid of them.
Just get rid of those kids.
And her children give her a Valentine's Day gift, which is weird to me.
Really?
Like, I would never give my parents anything for Valentine's Day. I never gave... Like, my mom used to get mad at me that I would never give her a gift for her anniversary with my father. And I was like, this isn't something for me to celebrate. You made me come into this world.
I wasn't there.
Like... I gave my mom to give you a gift.
I think I gave my because I when I was little, I lived in a house with my mom, my grandma, and my great grandmother. So it was all generations of ladies in a house. And I think I remember, like, at school at least,
maybe
they would literally be like, "We're making gifts for your moms or whatever, like, or your parents." So, like, in school, I kind of had to make gifts for Valentine's Day for my family.
I don't think they did that
in
my school.
Yeah, I didn't do it after a while when I got older.
Yeah, but these kids have presented a potted plant, and they apparently, like, painted the plot. I assume they made the plot out of some mud they found in the backyard. And Lynette is, finally, she's not embarrassed, and she goes to put it out on the front lawn for the
whole place
to see. Yeah.
She looked really cute in this episode. Also, like, how did she think they made the pot? They have no money. I don't know. Like, at least whenever, like... Like, if we were buying something for my mom, my grandmother would, like, buy the thing for me and then give it to me to get my mom. So maybe she thought Tom bought it.
Maybe.
I don't know. I just was like, what the fuck? But then the next day, we see an older woman who we will learn is Mrs. McCluskey taking the pot from Lynette's front porch, and Lynette freaks out and is like, hey, and Mrs. McCluskey's like, I bought this in Costa Rica. The price tag is right here. Your boys stole it from me. And Lynette doesn't have a clap back because Mrs. McCluskey is correct.
Oh, I did write in my notes when I found out it was the day before Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. I did say that we should go on a Valentine's Day date.
We should go on a Valentine's Day date.
We should. We'll have a romantic day. Anyway, we'll talk about that after we're not recording.
Afterward, yeah.
So then we get the opening credits, as always. Crunch your bones to
Crunch
it.
Crunch those bones.
Juice them. Do whatever you want. Put them in a salad. and then we get another little Mary Alice voiceover over all of the men, and you see that it's the day before Valentine's Day, and they're all making various plans, and I'm a little confused because it's like, Mike is just now making a dinner reservation.
The fact that he was able to get a reservation at that fancy of a restaurant the day before Valentine's Day is crazy unrealistic.
Tom apparently forgot, but at least he forgot the day before.
Yeah, so right? It's not like the day of, because then I also don't really follow up on him forgetting, because they, spoiler alert, have like a fine meal later, so it didn't seem like they made, I thought they were going to make it a plot point of him like forgetting, and then
why
they
would
just,
they?
Yeah, they just didn't. I mean, there was more important stuff going on in this episode, but I just was like, oh, is this going to be a plot? And then it wasn't.
But then we cut to Susan telling the hot goss about Dana to all the women.
Yeah, literally Paul being like, I trust you to keep my secret. And Susan was like, sure thing. I think I even said last episode, does he know he's talking to? Because obviously she will tell everyone. Yeah, they're on the Solis porch just spilling the tea. And they all got the info that Zach killed Dana. And Bree, you know, is like, obviously it was an accident because if he was such a little kid. And Susan's like, either way, Zach is disturbed and I will not let him see my daughter anymore.
They also bring up the fact that it's like, why would you like take down all of the pictures and everything like that? I feel like Susan doesn't really buy it.
No, I mean, Detective Suze is here. Mm-hmm. She like, because Gabby is like, wow, I almost feel sorry for him. And Susan's like, something's not right. Like, yeah, the photo, there's no photos of this other baby. And also, why would they keep the blanket but throw out all the photos? And also she poses like, we never figured out why she went by Angela and changed her name. Like, Detective Suze, fedora on, she is fucking here.
I love my detective wife.
Detective Suze is in the fucking house for sure.
There's a very interesting line also during the scene. I think Bree says it while holding Lynette's baby.
Yes.
But she basically says, like, when you love a child that much, like, you're willing to do all sorts of things for them.
Yeah.
I just thought it was an interesting line. It does make sense because it's like, if you actually listen, like, Bree, if you actually listen to the words that you're saying, is like, it basically sounds like because they covered all of that up, they love Zach more than they ever loved Dana.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you should love both of those children.
Yes.
But anyway, I'm sorry.
No, it's good. And then we cut to Paul doing the dishes with the limpest wrist of all time. And the Tillmeister's bringing over some flowers that were delivered to her by mistake from Mary Alice. And it seems like she doesn't even realize that Mary Alice isn't a person who's alive.
Yeah.
Because Paul looks really sad and he's like, oh shit, I forgot to cancel my Valentine's order.
Had a standing order for months.
I mean, I guess it's like,
it's probably just like a yearly thing. It's just like,
and it's probably, I mean, like, I wouldn't have thought about it. Like, I truly would have been like, shit, and you know, she apologizes for Mary Alice's death and he apologizes for the Hooveses, and she's like, her, and once again being very weird about the Hooves. But the best part of the scene, oh, it was so tasty. She looks over and sees a photo of Mary Alice and laughs, saying, oh, that's Angela. And Paul is like, what the fuck are you talking about? And she's like, 15 years ago, I worked in Utah, and that was my coworker, Angela. And Paul covers the photo and is like, you're mistaken. That's Mary Alice. She's never been to Utah. Get out of my house. And I was like,
so delicious.
Oh, I was like, the
Tillmeister's
here. Yeah, she looks shocked, but I think she saves face very well and is like, all right, must have just been one of those faces.
Yeah.
But I wrote, if she's anything like her sister, she's going to sniff out the truth.
Oh, yeah. She's like more ruthless than her sister.
Oh, for sure.
But
so
then,
I loved that. I loved it so much. It was tasty.
But then we cut to Gabby. She's up to her asses and bills.
Her asses? Multiple asses? All the asses she has.
I said what I said. I would also like to point out that she had bangs in the first scene, and she doesn't have bangs throughout any of the other scenes.
Yeah, maybe she pushed them back? Maybe. I can't really tell.
But basically, this whole scene is to be like, we don't have money, and I'm being mean to this woman who works for me, because she's basically pretty rude to Yaolin.
Yeah.
And
yes, it was really bad.
There's a whole thing where they have a back and forth, and my lines are, one day you'll be old, and this is Yaolin, one day you'll be old, and when that happens, you'll be nothing. And then I wrote, she's so fired. And then the next line I wrote is, no kidding. Because
I mean, I said good for Yaolin. Like, yes. Gabby was being really, especially being gross. Like, to think about the stuff that, like, not only is Yaolin, like, there's a huge power dynamic between the two of them, because Yaolin is her employee, mm-hmm. her, like, severely underpaid employee. And also to think about, like, how, like, long Yaolin covered for Gabby with her affair, knowing full well it was happening. Like, not to, like, I'm sure Yaolin has done other things for Gabby, and for Gabby to be so mean and, like, privileged over Yaolin was awful. So I was, like, I was pretty happy when Gabby, not when Gabby, when Yaolin popped off at Gabby. I was like, way to go, girl. You probably should get a different job.
Yes. And then we cut to what?
Liz, the next thing.
The next thing?
The fucking art style of Susan Meyer.
I was going to say, does this count as her doing her job? I mean, because we don't see her do the job.
Liz, I don't ever want to insult someone's art, but this is so, it's not good. For someone who can afford that house as a children's book illustrator to draw Mike with a pear-shaped body, he's a Dorito. I don't know.
He's a Dorito, not a pear.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, I think every time they show her art, it's like comically simple to the point where, like, I've never seen a children's book drawn in that way. And I just am like, how does she afford this house if that's how she draws? And I like how she hand drew the card and it just said "Be mine" in it. It said nothing else.
Well, not to be too spoilery, there is a moment later where Mike gives Susan a card, and she's like, it's very beautiful what you wrote in it. And then, like, the next scene, you see that it's just a pre-generated thing, and he just says, be mine, Susan. So, like,
it's maybe that's just where they're at. I jumped a little bit ahead, but basically Mike and Susan is exchanging a Valentine's card with Mike. But I had to drag her artwork first before said the plot to our listeners. I'm so sorry.
I thought that was all I was going to say is, does this count as her doing her job, even though we don't technically see her draw it?
That's true.
Does it count? We're still at one.
Who knows? Yeah.
But basically, like, Lynette is, like, screaming outside looking for her babies, and which is what I've called them throughout this.
For the babies.
And Mike finds the babies hiding on the side of the house.
They're in, like, his yard, yeah.
And he's like, hey, like, take your lumps, okay? Because they're scared their mom is going to spank them. Yes. And he's like, just take your lumps, and you'll get to play. And
he's really down to earth and sweet with them. And he's like, hop on, and he, like, gives them little rides. And he was really, he was especially handsome in this episode to me. Like, I just thought he was, like, very tasty in every episode, in every, like, scene he was in. But he just was really attractive, being really, like, sweet with the kids. He's the sweetest boy. It's very funny to me how my first watch, I didn't care about Mike literally at all. Mm-hmm. And now I really, really like him. Yeah, I thought he was really good with the kids. And he takes them back over to Lynette's.
And on the way there, Susan notices that he's good with kids and says something. And he goes, yeah, I love kids. I can't wait to have my own someday. And then we get a comedy queen Susan tripping
comedy
moment.
Queen Susan falls over, busts her ass, and looks pretty shocked that Mike wants a baby. And then at the Scavo house, immediately after, we see Lynette is laying out spanking utensils and making the kids choose what they want to be spanked with, which was fucked up for me.
Yes.
I mean, I don't agree with spanking as a form. I don't think that hitting your children is a way to get them to obey. Can I tell you something funny about spanking, though?
Sure.
I was spanked a total of, like, 3 times in my life as a child. And the reason why it stopped, I remember one time vividly, I was naked because my mom was drying me off. Remember when your mom would dry you off after a bath?
Yeah.
And she spanked me and it left a little mark on my bare butt. But that was like the first time. And then the last time I was spanked, the reason why it was the last time is because, I don't think I've ever told you this. I think I've only told Rachel this.
I don't know what you're going to say.
I don't know what the fuck I did. Probably nothing. And my mom put me over her lap and pulled her hand back and spanked me as hard as she could. And I just puked everywhere, all over my mom all over the floor. Like, my mom had spanked the puke out of my body. My mom never spanked me again. So that's a tried and true method, everybody. Puke on your parents and they'll never spank you again.
I once laughed so hard I threw up.
That's upsetting.
I used to work at an unnamed movie theater chain. and I worked with, like, one of my technically 2 of my friends from high school, but it was me, her, and our other friend, and we went to get tacos after work. It was like 1 a.m. and I was eating my burrito and I was done, and my friends made me laugh so hard I threw up onto my plate.
That's horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so sorry, listeners, that we just talked about puke.
Where were we?
The spanking.
Getting spanked.
But basically, the scene sort of ends with her saying, hey, I won't spank you if you promise not to steal again, and you write letters to Mrs. McCluskey. And they all immediately agree to that. They're like, yes, please, we don't want to be spanked.
And then we find out that she was never really going to spank them.
No.
It was just psychological warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And then we cut to something I haven't seen, I don't think, since episode 5.
Yeah, if even that.
Back at therapy.
Yes, Dr. Goldfine. Hello
yes.
again. It's been a hot... I literally wrote, it's been a hot second since we've seen him.
Yes. We find out that Bree and Rex are just together now, I guess? And they're having a dinner party next week for 10 people?
Yeah, I literally was like, when did that happen? And then later I wrote, I feel like I missed an episode.
I literally wrote in my notes, I would have loved to see, like, a scene like that.
Yeah, like, I guess, I think I wrote it in my notes later, but I was like, maybe that conversation with George where he was like, I would forgive him if I were you. We are led to assume that is what she did afterward, but I would have liked to have seen that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And also, like, I feel like Bree is, like, the past couple episodes, I know in the beginning of the series we talked that, like, Bree didn't really have a consistent character or anything. I think that, like, it was still true, like, she still doesn't. But I think, like, she had, like, specific things in the past couple episodes that she just kind of, like, kept up. Like,
yes.
She was really struggling with, like, wanting to take him back and not, like, wanting to fuck with him. And it just kind of got all thrown away, and we're just back in a Bree wasteland of character.
Yeah, it's a little confusing, and I'm hoping that it shapes up. But this did feel like such a weird backtrack of how she's just like, yeah, I'm just putting the feelings that I have that are bad away, and I'm not going to talk about them. And it's like, it just felt like this was a Bree from a couple episodes ago.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like we were moving in a different direction, and now they've completely pulled back. It just felt, it felt a little weird. And then them just being together, I really kept looking and being like, did I skip an episode? Am I watching the wrong episode this week? But I wasn't. They just didn't show us. And there was a couple weeks in between the airing of the last episode and this one. So maybe, if we believe the show is working kind of in real time with its release schedule, maybe it's been a couple weeks since I have no way to justify it. I have no clue.
Who knows? But basically we find out that Bree doesn't know that Rex is his name. He wants to be pegged. And she asks the therapist, is it bad that what I can't give him? And Dr. Goldfine just stays silent.
That was a beautiful song.
Thank you.
And yeah, Goldfine's like, you need to just talk to your husband.
Yeah. Oh, there was a, I mean, like, this is a sad joke, but it, I thought it was funny and I wrote it down. When he's like, you'd settle for a life full of depression and denial. And Bree just goes, and the dinner parties. Don't forget the dinner parties.
Yeah. Also, so in my little book, I have a couple fun facts for my book, finally. They haven't really come into play in a while. Mark Cherry was like, hey, we knew in the beginning we wanted Rex to have a sexual secret. And apparently it was almost that he was gay.
Oh.
Which I'm curious, when I'm knowing that information, seeing Bree's reaction to Goldfein's silence, I was curious if that's what she maybe assumed.
Oh.
Is that he's gay?
Maybe.
But then they were like, no, that's too similar to like every plot in the world. So then they scrapped that. And then it turned into he was going to only like sex in like disgustingly filthy places.
Oh my God.
But then they thought that was too bizarre and stupid and playing into her OCD. So then they decided to go with my favorite, quote unquote, some nice garden variety S&M.
Oh my God.
Was what
God.
He called it. And he put in the book, he's like, I'm still waiting for people to get mad about it and send in letters, but no one got mad about it, and people were mostly sending letters about Gabby having sex with an underage boy.
So, which is why they made him freshly 18.
Yeah, so I just thought it was funny how we talked about that last episode and how Mark Cherry almost confirms, like, people weren't mad about the BDSM, they were mad about Gabby having
good.
Sex with an underage boy.
Good.
So way to go, people, in 2005.
Hell yeah.
But that's my little, that's the first of like two fun facts I have. The second one's very good. It's gonna come a little bit later in the epi though.
And then we cut to Gabby. We find out she is going to sell mattresses, but she's not gonna sell them. She's just gonna lay on them and show people. She's gonna, they put her in lingerie and
yeah.
She's gonna like sell the mattresses by being like, there's other things you can do on mattresses, like jump or eat dinner or fuck, I guess.
Liz, you'd be perfect for that job. Wow.
Yeah, I'm wearing lingerie right now.
I know, I really love
naked.
It. You
lingerie
look
to me is just naked. I'm wearing boxer briefs and that's it. That's lingerie.
That's lingerie
to me.
I've realized that when Edie is not in the episode, there is a distinct lack of sapphic energy for me. Because
mm-hmm.
the episodes without her, I find it hard finding lesbians in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
But there were probably
actual
lesbians.
Lesbians
in this scene. So I wanted to just, you know, chuck them in the bucket, those
yeah.
lesbians that
chuck
laid in the bed.
Chuck those lesbians in the bucket.
Chuck those lesbians in the bucket for lesbian of the episode. Because they were the lesbians that were laying with Gabby in the mattress store.
Yeah.
You know, once again, whenever we get, like, a probably actual lesbian, they're, like, a very strange, like, 2005 stereotype, but I love them anyway.
Yeah.
I love those dykes, so I want to throw them in the bucket. They're my nominee for
okay,
lesbian
okay.
of the episode.
Okay. Okay.
And then back at the Scavo house, we see that Lynette is doing laundry and hears McCluskey just come into
she
the house.
She just fucking walks into the house.
She just walks in. Why does Lynette not... I mean, I guess it's like those neighborhoods that no one locks the door. But like, you know, maybe when there's people getting murdered on your street, you might
Literally.
Lock the door. Whatever. McCluskey starts going into the boys' room and looking for a purple wall clock that she says her son made her.
Yes, her son painted.
Yes. And Scavo's like, Scavo. Lynette's like, they don't have it. Please leave my house. Stop being crazy. And McCluskey kind of just insults her as a parent and is like, your kids are ill-behaved and messy.
Now, I did say McCluskey for lesbian of the episode for this little turtleneck that she was wearing.
She did kind of look like a lesbian.
Yeah. But if she's going to be in the whole show, should we just give it to the lesbians?
Maybe. She is going to be around a lot more.
Should we give it to the lesbians?
Let's give it to the actual lesbians.
Okay.
Okay. Well, then that was quick. The lesbians from the last scene are officially the lesbian in the episode. Lesbians, another doubleheader.
Yeah.
Yeah, McCluskey will be around and still looking gay. So we can
give
until
she dies in season 8.
You're going to, like, make that prediction every time we see her?
Yeah.
And what's after this? Who knows?
We cut to Brex.
Brex. I mean, that might be their ship name.
We cut to Brex, and this is when I wrote, would have loved a reconciliation scene, but whatever.
Yeah,
They're basically sitting in silence. And then Bree says, I don't please you sexually.
Yeah, they're like talking about their Valentine's plans very blandly. And then she's like, yeah, please I want to know how to satisfy you sexually.
And then he goes, I like to be dominated. And she's like, what? And he goes, sexually.
This is where my other fun fact is. Liz, I'm really into this.
Was this Marsha Cross genuinely not understanding, and they didn't give her lines? They just told her to improvise.
No, there was a line that was cut here because it did not make it past standards and practices as okay for the TV show. And so Stephen Culp, who plays Rex, said that originally there was going to be a line where when he's like, "I like to be dominated sexually." Bree's line was originally, well, I can get on top as long as I can wear my bra.
Oh my god. That's like tame.
I know.
It's like so tame.
But I really think that's a funny fucking line. That's
so funny.
What a funny line. It's like a very funny and niche line. I wish they would have kept it. So that got cut because they thought it was too inappropriate. But I think it's very funny, and I'm glad I can share it with you all here.
Yes, it's on the DVD.
It's on the DVD. Hopefully, I can't wait to watch that DVD.
But basically, she does not understand what that means still. So he shows her BDSM porn, and I wrote, "Oh my god, how did I forget this?"
So I get the impression from Brie that she has not watched porn in her life, and to go from 0 to 100 with BDSM porn is probably a lot.
Yes.
And she says the incredible line, "What did your mother do to you? Because this reeks of unresolved childhood trauma." Which I do not agree with. He says very accurately, it's a preference. It is just literally a sexual preference that he has, and plenty of people have it, and it is healthy and normal when done in a healthy and correct way.
Yes.
But I did think the line was funny. Even though I don't agree with that, I think that it was a pretty funny line.
But I was like, do you think he, like, when she was giving her, like, eviscerate speech, do you think he was, like, scared? And, like, turned on a little bit. Do you think he was like, yes, eviscerate me. Eviscerate me.
I mean, daddy.
Mommy.
Mommy, eviscerate me. He might have been a little turned on.
I don't know. I just wanted to throw that out there. Write us a letter. Send it to our P.O. box.
It's just more proof that Brie could be a dom. She just did it.
This show is wrong. Oh, and she fucking punches him. Or she slaps him. But it sounds like a punch.
Yeah.
It sounds like he fucking got knocked.
He got knocked because he was like, she was like, do you want me to hurt you? And then she just slaps the fucking shit out of him. It was pretty bonkers, and she left pretty angry, and he seemed a little upset. And rightfully so. He was so terrified to put himself out there. And I can't believe I'm, like, siding with Rex right now, but he was so terrified to put himself out there. She ensured him over and over and over again she could handle it. And then immediately she is really, really terrible to him when it was something he was terrified to open up about and was willing to hide it. She, like, forced him to open up with it and then hurt him in response. And that's pretty sad. I mean, like, I think their marriage is unhealthy, and I don't think they should be together, and I think that this is a huge example of why they shouldn't be together. But that's just me.
And then we cut to Susan talking to her mom that we see for the first time.
Julie.
But yeah. No, oh yeah, Julie. Sorry, it was Julie.
I was thinking of specifically Taylor, who doesn't watch. I would be like, what? Susan's mom?
No.
Susan's mom will be here later in the season.
Her other mom, spoiler Julie. Alert.
Her other mom, Julie. Queen Julie.
Queen Julie's back. I wrote Julie, ugh. Julie, Julie.
I fucking love Julie, Liz. I love her so much.
I would die for Julie. Andrea Bowen. I hope if I say her name 3 times, she appears, but she never does. Anyway.
We're going to interview her one day.
Susan. I hope. Basically, Susan tells Julie that Mike wants babies, and she is not doing it again, which he never asked her to have a baby. And, like, I know that she's, like, thinking, like, down the future, like, she wants to be with him, and so she's thinking, like, down the line in the future, like, I don't want to have more babies, and he does, and so she's very concerned.
Yeah. I mean, when you are a couple of a certain age, right? When, like, mm-hmm. I mean, what? They're probably in their, like, mid to getting close to late 30s, right? Maybe? Maybe 40s? I can't quite
Julie's
tell.
Julie's 14.
Yeah. So, you know, something around, like when you are a couple, basically, that's, like, not in your 20s, mm-hmm. that is something that you're going to discuss of, like, that's a huge disparity, like, yeah. between two people. Like, if one person wants kids and one person doesn't, yeah. you really do have to figure that out if you're planning on really, really committing to a person, especially if you are of an age where, like, you know, like, if he was with Susan, like, how many more years does she have that she could be, like, viable to carry a child and things like that?
I think, like, my mentality behind this just coming so left field for me right now from Susan, like, being, like, freaking out about it is because, yeah. like, even though, like, I know it's been months and, like, they've probably been dating for, like, a large portion of those months, I feel like they, like, just started dating last week.
Yeah.
So it I'm does just, like, feel this pretty is, soon. It's been, like, 2 weeks, Susan. Like, calm down.
Yeah. Like,
but I mean, like, I see where you're coming from. That is very understandable. But it's, like, there's also other options that obviously, like, people, like, in this TV show, because they're awful rich people, are never going to think about because they want to have their own babies. They don't want to adopt and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my rant.
But, you know, Susan, like, is like, I can't tell him because I don't want to lose him. And Julie, once again, gives really sound and mature advice here and is like, you know, like, if you really care about this guy, you should tell him. And also, like, I bet he's going to want you more than he wants to lose you for a kid. Like, I think you just need to talk to him. And Julie is so mature and wonderful. Mm-hmm. I love her so fucking much.
Yeah. And then we find out that children are actually the last thing on Mike's mind because mm-hmm. he's making rounds trying to get info because he's on a deadline now.
Yes.
And he's not really doing so hot and he tries to knock on a door. There's nobody home as far as he knows. So he decides to break in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sad.
Yeah. It's an intense
scene.
There
is someone in the house.
Yes, Mike starts looking around. It's you. Mike starts looking around a bit, and he opens a door and sees a very terrified man because he heard someone break into his home. He has a gun in his hand, and Mike says, "Hey, it's okay," and the man shoots him in the stomach, and Mike runs out with a gun, like a bullet wound, just seeping out of his shirt as he's running to his car and trying to get away.
I love how people shoot guns in TV that aren't, like, shows where they have guns all the time, like when, like, in Buffy, like when the director in, like, season 5 shoots the gun and she's just like the, or season 4 when is it,
I don't
season
know.
4 or 5 she's shooting a gun and she's literally, like, has her, like, arm in just, like, an L position and she just shoots these giant ass guns, no recoil or anything. Not that I care that it's, I just think it's funny. It's just something I wanted to point out.
Yes, this man definitely looked like he did not know how to actually hold a gun. But hey, he got Mike in the stomach.
Got Mike in that little stomach.
And then we see that we cut pretty quickly to Mike at his house having his wound dressed by a doctor who clearly works for Noah, the guy that Mike mm-hmm. works for. He says Mike's going to recover, and we get a little bit of a clue about Deidre because he looks at the photo of Mike and Deidre and says, "Hard to think that a girl from such a good family could get so messed up."
Yeah.
So clearly something happened to Deidre maybe even before she went missing.
Yeah, because we know that Mike killed someone for her.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of mystery and drama surrounding her.
I love it. I can't wait to find out.
And we find out a little bit in the scene that the reason why Mike was kind of canvassing that neighborhood in the first place is because someone recognized her photo and mm-hmm. said that she had stayed in that neighborhood before. And so that's why he's starting to try to snip the clues out over there. So we kind of get a little bit of justification for why he was canvassing houses in the first place.
Mm-hmm. And Susan calls him while he's getting stitched up. And she's like, "Listen, your lights are on. I'm coming over." Which is
creepy.
Like, okay, Susan, just, like, chill out. Maybe he's
out.
Showering. Like, and he also, like, he picks up the phone and he's like, no, don't come over. I just stubbed my toe.
Yeah, he's like, "I have a friend over." And she's like, "Cool, I'll come over anyway." And it's like, no, he has a friend over. Yes, it's a lie, but still.
Yeah. It's like, Susan, you learn boundaries.
Yeah, truly.
But basically, they plan to talk at dinner because he got that reservation.
Mm-hmm.
We cut back to McCluskey. And she's in her car, and she's yelling at Lynette, being like, "Give me my clock!" And Lynette's like, "They didn't have the clock!" And she's like, well, then tell your little stinky babies to keep their little stinky bikes out of the stinky little street. And Lynette says no. Or she was like, I will once you say please. And so McCluskey fucking runs that bike over. It was wild.
It was so pretty
good.
Funny.
It was so good.
She runs the bike over and then goes, please. And Lynette fucking, so she's unloading groceries at Tom. Yes. That's an important thing to know. Because then she pulls, no, well, only now it matters. Because she pulls the eggs out of the grocery bag and fucking nails McCluskey's car with an egg. And when McCluskey gets out of the car, she fucking nails McCluskey's face with an egg. Which is,
I'm surprised she didn't die right there.
A bonkers bananas thing to do, Lynette.
So, if she just started like a fucking war with this woman.
Oh my god,
yeah. I
can't
wait for them to be foils and then eventually fall in love when Tom dies in season 4.
These are some hilariously bold predictions you're making. Everyone's gonna think you're just giving spoilers out.
I don't. I've not seen past season 1, and you know me talking about season 1 in this show. I barely remember it anyway.
I love it. I'm excited for it to uncover this with you. And then we cut to Gabby, who is sleeping on the mattress she's supposed to be working on. Has a sign that she's made that says don't talk to her, basically. And we didn't say his name earlier, but the guy that owns the mattress place goes by the name the Siesta King. Mm-hmm. And he walks up, he's pissed at her. She insults him, and he says, your agent told me you were a diva. You're fired, princess. Mm-hmm. And she loses that job just as quickly as she got it.
Hell yeah. And then we get a quick scene of Lynette finding out that the babies did, in fact, steal the clock.
Yes. Well, also, before that, she's on the phone with her insurance talking about the egging incident.
Yes, who is she talking to?
It felt like an insurance conversation. So that was like, why the fuck does your insurance need to get involved? It's not a car wreck, you just egged someone's car. So that was weird. But then Tom yells and is like, come look at this, and there's a slew of stolen items that the babies took.
Yes, I like how we're just calling them the babies now.
They're the babies now.
And then we cut to Tillmeister, baby.
Tillmeister,
and she has labeled binders. So like the Hoobs had journals, Tillmeister has labeled binders of her shit. Pulls one out and flips through it because she knows she was right, and Angela, aka Mary Alice, is in a picture with her from when they worked at the hospital together
in Utah. Also, I have a lot of questions about the Tillmeister.
Yes.
I wrote, did she not have the estate sale? And also, does she not have her own house, or is she just staying in Wisteria Lane now?
Maybe she moved her stuff into the Hoobs' place because it looks exactly the same. I don't know where I'm going with this, and I'm going to abandon ship.
She's clearly just like sticking around Wisteria Lane, and I just was curious if there's more to handle with the Hoobs, or if she's just staying here now and they just haven't addressed it. I just was like, I like that she's here. I think she should be here for the story because it's cool. But also, I'm like, I wish they would address why she's still here.
Yeah. But maybe she sold her original house. Maybe. Staying at the Hoobs' place just while she gets her shit in order so that she can move.
Maybe. But either way, we get that little tasty treat that there is indeed a photo of her and Angela. And then we cut to Gabby trying to buy some moisturizer and realizing she can't afford it. And Mary Alice is giving this monologue that she says Gabby realizes that what really needs a makeover is her pride. And there's actually a pretty cool transition of Gabby looking off in the distance at the Help Wanted sign, and it cuts and she works at the makeup store now. It was a pretty well done transition. I was actually like, oh, that's really good.
It's like in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend when Josh is at the tech place and he wants to work there. Anyway, stay tuned for a Crazy Ex-Girlfriend podcast. Patreon only. But basically, like, at least she has, like, a job that I'm assuming has to do with one of her interests, which is makeup.
Yeah.
She seems to be interested in it, and, like, at least that's something.
I don't know how good she's going to be at customer service, but
well, we'll see, because we have our first customer, Mackenzie.
Oh, Yeah, it's Yalyn, baby.
Yeah, baby. And she's going to be an asshole customer for revenge.
She's going to give her the bit of taste of her own fucking medicine.
I literally wrote, she's going to be the asshole customer. Good for her.
I loved Yalyn. Yeah, good for her. I loved it.
I thought of you when I wrote that.
Good for her. Rachel and I do that fucking Arrested Development meme all the time.
I want to point out that if John Tucker saw that her name tag didn't say Mrs. Solis, I think his head would explode.
He'd be like, are you going by a fake name here at work? I get it. Staying incognito, Mrs. Solis.
Is somebody else have the same name as you? Is it like a Disney thing? You can't have the same name as someone else?
His whole world would end if he saw her name tag didn't say Mrs. Solis on it. Oh, also I wrote the makeup she does on Yalyn is like bad.
Yeah.
It's like not good makeup.
Yeah.
Basically she has some weird confrontation with Yalyn. I honestly don't remember what they talked about because I did not write it down. But that's the end of that scene. cut to the fancy French restaurant where the waiter is trying to fix a wobbly table. And for some reason the maitre d' seats Susan and Mike, even while seeing that someone is clearly underneath this table.
Yeah, like fixing the table.
And Susan is wearing literally the shortest dress to ever exist on the face of the earth. And she sits with her legs wide open.
Yeah. She doesn't know. She doesn't know any better. What are you going to make her sit with her legs closed?
Lesbian of the episode, Susan's sitting like a fucking butch in this tiny dress.
Can we change it?
Do you want to?
It's kind of funny.
Susan sitting like a butch, like wide-legged in this dress at
Wait, I mean, like, we said we were gonna give it to the actual lesbians. I know. But like, that's so funny. Can she be like the runner-up?
The runner-up is Susan sitting like a butch in this dress, and obviously the man looks and sees pussy.
She's not wearing underwear because it's Valentine's Day, Mackenzie. Don't you know? Have to wear lingerie or no underwear, and I am wearing lingerie, which is just boxer briefs. We've established this.
I don't know. His face gave me the impression that she wasn't wearing panties, and that dress is so short.
So did her.
Susan.
So did like her reaction. I mean, like obviously, like she's going to be upset even if she was wearing underwear because he was looking up her dress. But like the way that she like flies up, Susan, comedy queen.
I thought she was gonna go through the roof.
She just fucking takes off like a rocket. Explodes through the roof of the restaurant, and she just fucking takes off in that aluminum foil spaceship dress.
It's like she trust falled with the wall. She just threw herself. What if it cut away and then it cuts back and there's just a Susan-shaped hole in the wall like it's Looney Tunes, and she just fucking fell back.
The credits roll, and we get a shot of Susan floating through space, not knowing what's going on.
And then it does, like, Team Rocket's blasting off again, and it just turns, Susan just turns into a tiny little speck in the sky. I want the audience to know that both Liz and I have tears in our eyes.
Why is that the funniest thing we've ever done on this show? Why is that where we pee?
Something
and then
more
everything else is garbage after this.
Oh, shit. Well, something more important technically happens in this scene. So Susan, as she's fucking rocketing through the wall. She knocks a waiter over, and then a woman in return, and Mike stands up to catch this woman.
Yes, and he's a good boy, so
he's a good boy.
Her.
He catches the lady that falls, and when he gets the woman back on her feet and everyone gets resettled, we see that he clearly ripped his wound open in catching the weight of the woman, and he sits back down and he's just like sweating profusely and bleeding out through his shirt.
I just want to know.
Yeah.
Because I'll talk about this when we get to the next season and Mike thing.
Okay.
But basically, like, they sit down, Susan brings up kids, and she's like, I'm not ready to have another baby. And I wrote, there's other ways to have this conversation, Susan.
Yes.
But basically, Mike says, like, I'm okay just being with you. Oh, no, he doesn't say that yet.
Right? No, he doesn't say anything. Because he's, like, he's so focusing
never
on...
Never mind. Spoiler okay. alert. Never mind.
He's so focused on bleeding out yes. and dying at the table that he doesn't say anything. He's kind of just being really, really stoic and yes. uncomfortable. And then we cut to the Scavo house, and it looks like Lynette and Tom are just having a dinner at home. And they're talking about McCluskey, and... Lynette doesn't want to apologize to her, even though Tom thinks that they should be good neighbors and apologize to Mrs. McCluskey because they were in the wrong. And he says the day will come when we're going to need her and I don't want a feud between you two.
Mm-hmm. And then they do a little flat-lipped kiss. Just to...
I wrote, Tom and Lynette share a sweet moment. Don't worry, Tom. I'm still thinking about last episode where you said you did something, bitch.
Yeah.
So, Tom, I'm still watching you, baby. This was a sweet moment, but I'm watching you, Tom. Yeah.
And then we cut back to Susan eating her meal. Yeah. So this is what I want to say is that time has passed and Mike so actively looks like he is dying and she has not noticed.
Honestly,
like enough time for them to get their orders taken and like wait for the food.
Saw the man across from that table. If I saw this like sweaty, uncomfortable man, I would think he's gotta like shit super bad yes. and that clearly he's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And the fact that she's just talking his ear off and doesn't even say, hey, are you all right? Is bonkers. When he like,
yes.
he's like pale and sweaty. It was absolutely wild. I wrote, my boy, I feel so bad.
I know.
And he just, she kind of, I think this is around the time where she finally kind of says the thing like, I really don't want kids and I hope you're okay with that.
Yes.
And he's like, cool. I gotta go.
And then she goes, she says, you're leaving without even trying to talk me into having your baby? You're not even trying to convince me? I would cave. I always cave. And I'm like, Susan, that's weird.
That's a weird thing to yell. Have some self-respect. As she's screaming this, Mike passes the fuck out.
He doubles over and she sees there's blood all over
his fucking shirt. He is covered in blood. Covered in it. Baby boy.
Then we cut to Grody Brex.
There was a really funny line in this scene I can't wait to get to.
Yeah, and Bree actually asks him how domination works. Like, she looks like she's, like, willing to try.
Wanting to try. Yeah.
And there's a very funny, like, interaction between the two of them where he's like, okay, so we need, like, a safe word.
He calls it control word, yeah. which I thought was not correct.
Sorry, like, that safe was my word. Bad.
Safe word is, like, the word everyone uses.
We need a... yeah, but it's trademarked. We need a control word. And I've been using Philadelphia. And Bree's like, okay, Boise. And then... My Rex favorite. Is like, you gotta take this seriously. When one, he's using Philadelphia as
yeah.
a phrase. But
my favorite thing is she went, oh, what about Palestine?
That's so, it's so funny. I wrote, I laughed so hard out loud at that.
And it wasn't even the line, it was the way she delivered it was so fucking funny.
It was so fucking,
it was like
so
she
good.
Just was thinking about how sad she is about Palestine.
Like, he's like, it needs to be something serious. And she's like,
How about Palestine?
He has this box that is not hidden in the yeah. top of their fucking thing, and he pulls out some handcuffs, and he's like, handcuff me to the bed, baby. And she asks if she can run it to the dishwasher first. Which I thought was funny, but it looks like Bree is
yes.
gonna open up, because I think she wants to try to make the marriage work.
Mm-hmm. She's willing to try.
She's willing to try, which is all you can really do. You just yeah. gotta try it out. See how you feel.
Yeah. Then we cut to Grey's Anatomy. Meredith Grey is standing over Mike's body.
I love that show. Genuinely.
But basically, like, the doctors are looking over him. They leave. Susan hears the two doctors being like, mm-hmm. No way that gunshot wound was self-inflicted. Anyway, the cops are gonna come talk to him. And mm-hmm.
and they also say that he mysteriously does not remember who stitched him up. So there's yes. a lot of holes in whatever story he told the doctors.
I would also like to point out, real quick,
mm-hmm.
the stuff about, like, the like, because Susan goes in,
mm-hmm.
and they start talking about kids again.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I don't care about being a dad. I just want to be with you above everything else. technically Julie is a child, he would still be a dad.
Yeah, he would still be a dad.
But, like, I understand what he means, like, not like a baby.
Yes.
But
also, do you want to know my note right here? It's actually really important. My note right here is, in all caps, boobies.
You gotta send me a screenshot.
Susan's tits looked really good in that dress.
Oh my god.
And I was like, I am looking disrespectfully right now.
Oh my god. I gotta pay more attention to the show and not my note taking. You have
to pay more attention to Susan's titties, Liz.
I know. There was nips in the last one I missed.
Now there's titties.
Now there's
titties are the most important thing to this show.
That's why we are here.
Titties made me the woman I am today. Titties made me the lesbian I am today.
Oh my god. I'm crying again.
But it's a really sweet scene, and like Mike is telling her the things that she wants to hear, but she is now feeling a lot of doubt. And you can see it in her face. I thought Terry Hatcher did a good job at showing like, because of what the doctor said, she's now feeling really freaked out because there's a lot of things that are missing. And Mike kind of tells her the story he clearly told the doctors, and there's something off about it. And Detective Suze is in the house, and she can definitely tell that there is something a little off about the way Mike got shot.
Yes. And then we cut to
Scavo
household. Well, not really the household. The babies are going to apologize to McCluskey in person.
Yeah.
And McCluskey opens up and they're like, we're here to apologize. Sorry. And she's like, that's the best you got? And she's like, I got tea on the stove if you boys want to come in. And so she lets the boys in and Lynette's out there and they have this exchange being like, you here to say something? And Lynette's like, I'll stay outside.
Which is weird, because didn't Lynette just tell Tom she was going to go apologize to McCluskey? Yeah,
whatever. I think, so. I don't know.
Oh, I just wrote in my notes that I really love this scene, because I actually remembered it from my first watch. When it started, I remembered this scene, and I thought, oh, maybe that's why she won the Emmy, because even this small scene, I, like, vividly remembered after watching 8 seasons of the show, like, you know, I remembered this scene specifically. It's a really lovely scene.
It's very sad. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like also sad and it's cute because it's like the boys, like they sit down and she's like, do you want some peanut brittle? And she's like, don't get any on my couch. Okay.
She's very sweet with them.
And she like asks them their age. And like she has this picture above her like mantle. And the kids like ask, they're like, who is that? And she goes like, that's my baby. That's my boy.
That's my son.
That's my son. And he died when he was 12 because he was sick. Because they ask where he is. And that's why she says that.
And it's really sweet because she kind of looks at him and she says, you boys would have liked him. He was a lot like you. He was a little terror like you. And I loved him a lot. And it was just...
She also says a very short line when she's like shooing them out of her house where she's like, nobody's ever going to love you except your mom. Okay, so...
Yeah, it's just a really sweet scene. And I really love... I just love that we see this moment of softness with this kind of crotchety old woman who has so many walls up, clearly. And I don't know, I just really love her. And a lot of my feelings are influenced by the series because I think she's a great character. But I really loved that when she was saying, like, no one will love you like your mom. I don't know, I had a thought and I can't remember what it was. I just really loved, like, how kind she was with them and how soft she was with them and how the Mary Alice monologue was like...
I understand, like, I'm sorry to interrupt you really quickly, but, like, I understand, like, why she just walked into Lynette's house, because it's, like, her son painted her that clock.
Yeah, she needed it back. I mean, like, that, to think about, I mean, she's an old woman, older woman. He's probably been gone for a long time, which means that clock is old as shit. Like, of course, it's like an antique and something so dear to her. And, yeah, I loved the Mary Alice monologue saying, like, Lynette assumes that she has nothing in common with this woman, and yet the love they share for their children is the thing that they have most in common, that these women have so much more in common than they'll ever know.
It's like not fully tying into the line that we heard in the beginning of the episode, but like a little bit where it's like, you love a child so much you would do anything for them.
Yeah. I thought it was a really lovely scene and monologue to go with it. It was great.
And then for, like, the last little, like, scene.
Oh, it's tasty.
We have Susan, and Lynette, like, comes up to Susan, and she's like, listen, like, my boys were stealing things from around the neighborhood, and they found this in Mike's garage, which is crazy, because I'm going to say what it is, but I wrote about this in my notes, like, halfway through the episode. I was like, hey, whatever happened to the evidence that Paul planted in Mike's garage? Because I never, like, that hasn't come back into play. Well, now it has. Here because it's the Hoobs' bracelet.
Mm-hmm. And it has her name engraved on the inside, and that's how they know that it belonged to the Hoobs, and it was found in Mike's house.
Mm-hmm.
And Detective Seuss was already feeling iffy about Mike because of his mysterious gunshot wound, and I think this was the nail in the coffin for Detective Seuss that, oh my god, he's a killer.
Ugh.
I thought that was tasty as fuck.
That was so good. That was such a good ending.
Yeah.
Because it makes you want more.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, all signs point to Mike at this point, really. Yeah. And he already has cop suspicions on him, so it's not looking good for our Mikey boy. And we get kind of our classic end of episode montage of where everyone is. We see that Gabby is coming home to a happy Carlos. Carlos, I feel like we haven't talked.
Yeah. Oh.
We didn't, like, heard from him. It was kind of, like, a weird scene. In a lot of episodes.
Because she was, like, very, very happy to see him.
Yeah. It's weird. We see that Bree has washed the handcuffs. We see that Paul and the Tillmeister have a bit of an exchange in the front yard. And we see that a final moment of kind of Karen looking at the photo of her son. And then the last thing we see is Susan looking over at Mike's house, I think knowing what she's about to do. I mean, I'm assuming, is she going to turn him in? Like, what, like,
I think she's gonna confront him.
Yeah, she's got a Detective Seuss.
To the police.
Detective Seuss, fedora on.
Last time she went to the cops, boyfriend. They didn't do anything.
That's true.
They tried to fuck her.
That's true. That's true. But that's the end of the episode, Liz.
Juicy.
That
baby.
Is a juicy fucking episode.
Yes.
I really liked this episode. I'll say it.
It was good.
Good epi. Good epi. So if you want to find us on social media, you can find us at Desperate Dykes on Twitter and Instagram, as well as DesperateHouseDykes.com, our official website.
Oh, we have some beautiful merch.
Like, ooh, tasty.
Kinky, kinky, dirty, nasty, sex wet.
as well as Fairview High Abstinence Club.
Yes, a classic Stay Juicy.
And just a plain old Desperate House Dykes t-shirt.
And that's all of our merch listed.
Basically.
And if you want to find us personally, you can find me on any and all form of social media at The Pigeon Wizard.
And you can find me at Mackenzie Wilkes on Twitter.
Also, my name, I keep forgetting to be like, my name's Liz, but I feel like people know that by now.
Yeah, I hope so. I also don't say what my name is, I guess, but my name is in my handle. Your handle. Yeah.
Anyway. If you want to do something a little extra special, a little Valentine's Day treat for us, you can leave us a review on iTunes. We love reading them. They're so fun. And usually we ask something at the end of every episode. Last time we asked,
I think it was your deepest, darkest secret.
It was your deepest,
secret.
Darkest secret.
How do we follow that up?
Valentine's Day scene?
Yeah. Who is your Desperate Housewives Valentine? Who on the lane? Who on Wisteria Lane would you ask to be your Valentine?
Oh, who would you ask?
I mean, Edie Britt, obviously.
Yeah, I knew that.
And you know what she would do? She would say no.
She'd spit in your face.
Yeah, she would say no to me, but I would ask her.
Part of me was going to be like, should we, like, say who would be your Valentine and if you think they would be yours back.
Oh yeah, I would ask Edie. She would say no to me, probably.
I would ask McCluskey and she would say yes.
Oh, that's tasty. Yeah. So when you leave us a little reviewy, let us know who you would ask to be your Wisteria Lane Valentine.
It could be us too.
It could be
us. We live on Wisteria Lane.
Mm-hmm. We're in the Munsters house that they don't show at all.
Oh, to live in the Munsters house. That's not all we got. Mackenzie, it's a very special Valentine's Day treat, Mackenzie.
Oh, okay. Let me know. What is it?
I just want to say that, Mackenzie, because it's Valentine's Day, mm-hmm, I think this is the perfect day to say this.
Yeah.
I love you.
I do. I love you.
Oh my god, Liz. I love you.
Oh my god.
Liz, I just want you to know, I don't want kids, but
I do love you. No, I don't want either. I just want my love for you to blossom into its own family.
My love is enough baby for me.
Our love is enough baby for me, Mackenzie.
Incredible. I love you.
There's a little tear.
There's a little tear in your eye. And then we got one more thing, baby.
There's only one more thing for everyone else out there. One, I'm going to switch it up a little bit. One, happy Valentine's Day, everyone. Two, stay juicy.
Stay juicy.